Woken, Sunday, 16th November, 1975. Each and every one of us knows the meaning of the deep slumber state. The state of sleep in which there are no dreams. In this state, the whole psychophysical organism has really entered a condition of perfect rest. And it is in this state that the real rejuvenation of the body takes place. Not only the body, but the whole organism. What I mean is, it includes the psyche. It is a state of complete harmlessness. I would like you to follow all this step by step very carefully. It's a state of complete harmlessness. During the day, each one of us, as a separatist organism, inflicts considerable harm, I deliberately say considerable harm, upon oneself and the environment. But in this state, in deep slumber, when the entire psychophysical organism is at rest, one is truly harmless. It is the state in which there is no isolative self-consciousness at all. No isolative self-consciousness. The ordinary man in the world, and I expect including medical people or psychologists and so forth, would say that it is a state of unconsciousness. I put it to you, it is not a state of unconsciousness in the sense of a total blank. It is actually a state of awareness in which there is no element of discriminative consciousness. It's very important to bear this in mind. The living organism never loses this transcendent state of awareness in which there is no analytical process, no differentiating activity. That is why it is the state of complete rest. It is the real Sabbath for the individual each day, the period which we may call the Sabbath. So, in this state, there is complete harmlessness, a total absence of isolated self-consciousness. Therefore, there is no selfness at all. There is no penetration by desire or the uprising of desire in that psychophysical organism in deep slumber. And especially, it is the state in which there is no thought process at all. And if there is no thought process at all, speech is completely absent. There is the utter silence of speech. Because there is the utter silence of the ordinary thinking process. You see, the ordinary thinking process involves what we commonly call the thinker, he who thinks. What actually happens is simply this, that because in our ordinary waking state, there is a process of thought, a mental activity which we call thought and or feeling going on, that thought and feeling is related by us, ourselves, by the organism, to this postulated I, which says, I am I. I think, I feel, and so forth. There is a self-orientation. Our human concept of self is completely bound up with this I am I consciousness. We include the body in the self as a matter of course. We take it for granted. And that is why the body is very much less a sinner than the mind of man. Now follow this very, very carefully. So in this state of profound slumber, there is harmlessness, there is utter selflessness, there is no thought process at all. There is no isolative self-consciousness. You and the universe are in perfect harmony. And it is because of this that the whole organism is vitalized, recharged with energy. It's an extraordinary mystery how this recharging with energy takes place through sleep. If there is real deep slumber, averagely speaking, as far as modern scientific research goes, out of 7 hours of sleep, we have at least about 5 hours of this deep slumber state, and 2 hours at least of the dreaming state. Now, this deep slumber state is the one that was named Sushupti by the old people. It's the Sanskrit word. The old people in India. In contrast to this, in sleep, there is the dreaming state, which is the Swapna state. Swapna is the word for dream. The dream state and the Sushupti state. The deep slumber state. And the ordinary waking state is called the Jagrat state. Ordinary waking state in everyday life. Now in the Upanishads, they declared unequivocally that the deep slumber state is the supreme state for man. Here, the ultimate real of which any living person is a part manifestation, the ultimate real embodied in the organism goes back, they use the term goes back, to its ultimate real condition. You can see at once how difficult it is, especially for the modern world, whether it be East or West, to appreciate just what they meant. People, quite naturally, not at all unjustifiably, would say, if this is all that the Upanishads have to teach, well, what have we to learn from it? Sounds as if all we had to do was to get into a deep slumber state, and there we are, everlastingly with God in a divine condition or some such stuff. No, no. Why do people say that kind of thing? Because they believe that so long as we are physically active, up and doing this, that and the other, so long as we are thinking hard, feeling intensely, excitedly and all the rest of it, we are alive. We are really wide awake to reality. Yes, of course, we are really wide awake to all the substanceless shadows cast by our useless activity. That they don't realize. Think for a moment. Is it at all possible that those perfected holy ones of the past should have upheld this state as the supreme state for the individual living being, if it was sheer nonsense? Is it at all possible? Is it at all possible that if it was nonsense, such a teaching should have survived for at least 35 centuries? What did they mean then by this? What is not stated sufficiently strongly and frequently in the Upanishads is just this: that he who in the waking state, the Jagrat state, can establish the Sushupti state, the deep slumber state, he is the one who is truly awake to the total transcendent reality of the whole universe. And he is the one who, in his works, his speech, his feelings and his thoughts, will express that perfection of the deep slumber state, where he is completely harmless, utterly selfless, free of the turmoil and the confusion, the illusions and the delusions of the thinking process, the thought process. Now you see, this is quite a different story, isn't it? There is a way to it, as they said. And the way you all know. The purification of the entire psychophysical organism through living the simple moralities, the commandments, if you like, the precepts, if you like to call them, of all the great religions of the world, and the disciplining of the mind in terms of becoming intensely and totally attentive and maintaining this state of attentiveness without exerting any choice as to what you will attend to. Now, is this quite clear? That, in a nutshell, is the whole of the spiritual life in the spiritual way. And since it is a way, it is a living process, which you, the living person, has to carry out, it is a process which can have no ending. There is no static fixed goal to which you arrive. But in your daily living process, from moment to moment, the phenomenon which we have named through the scriptures as the kingdom of heaven, or nirvana, or liberation, or moksha, is manifest through your living process from moment to moment. Let your attentiveness flag, let your morality become immorality, and that phenomenon vanishes. You are no longer the light. Follow this very, very carefully. Now, the person who lives in this way is the complete embodiment of religious living. And being the complete embodiment of religious living, he is the complete, total human being. The meaning of human, we can never repeat it too often. The happy creator, the creator whose continuous creative activity throughout life establishes a state of bliss. It establishes a state of mind which is utterly empty of all selfness, all self-orientedness, and therefore of every activity of mind and body which attempts to draw the world unto himself. He is like a vessel which has no substance. Therefore, there is no hindrance whatsoever to the free inflow of transcendent reality, of transcendent energy into his living being and out through it again. He is a benediction and a blessing upon the world in which he lives. But as a living being, there will necessarily take place physical actions. He will talk, he will feel, he will think. But a very different kind of feeling and thinking from the feeling and thinking of an ordinary mortal oneself. My feeling and thinking is not anything like that sort of feeling and thinking. In him, there is a thinking and a feeling. In me, in you, I think, I feel, you think, you feel. You see the difference? This imprisonment inside this hard shell of an I am I consciousness is no more. You're out of the prison when you are in that state. I want you to feel this now. With complete intensity, without strain, without tension. We are all contained in space. We don't have to strain to be in the space in which we live, do we? All right. In the same way. You know the statement, in Him we live and move and have our being. But where that statement is concerned, we are everlastingly in strain with it. We are always fighting against the transcendent, because we are insisting upon the I. And the ultimate and the most absurd insistence of the I is that, oh, I want to be one with the transcendent, to be one with God, to be one with the void, and all sorts of rubbish like that. Now, just be at ease in the mind. Don't strain. Let us consider one or two points germane to this. I said that it is the state which is free of the thought process, which is generated in the mind and by the person who is isolatively self-conscious. The emphasis is on the isolative. Now, as long as I am isolatively self-conscious, all my thinking is related to a center which is called the I. What's your thought process? It's a stream of words, of course. Don't say, oh, I don't think in words, I think in pictures and so forth. That is a nice little trick of self-deception, that you don't think in words. Because how do you know what your pictures mean? How do you know what your tunes mean to you in terms of actual living process and action? Accepting that you translate them back ultimately into words. You cannot escape the word. You cannot escape speech. Speech and thought are most intimately bound up with each other. Now, whatsoever thinking process takes place as a result of this I am I consciousness and drawing the world unto yourself, unto ourselves all the time, every such thought, every such words which passes silently through the mind represents something which begins, proceeds, and fades away or dies with birth and death. This is your real meaning of the word samsara, the Sanskrit word samsara, which means the cycle of births and deaths. It takes place right here, whilst this body is alive, in the mind. This is why it is referred to as the innumerable lives, as they say. The English word is lives. The Pali word is jati. Conditioned states. They are all conditioned states. Because of this, that, and the other influence at play, I am thinking like this. And the number of influences is tremendous. So, all those influences condition the immediate thought process. It begins, it proceeds, it passes away. It passes into some other thing all the time. like a squirrel in a cage, going round and round and round and round. And it is compelled to go round by this almost insuperable gravitational force of the I am I. That is the sunlight of darkness within us, if I may use such a paradoxical phrase. That is the sun of darkness, S-U-N, sun, which has this tremendous gravitational pull and makes our thought just go round, I am I. So, the entire thought process, the feeling process, and the consequent action process in the world is one which is completely confined to the realm of mortality. This is what is meant fundamentally by saying we are mortals. Fundamentally. And I affirm fundamentally for this reason. The body will of course die. Not even the holiest of the holy ones ever survived bodily. The body will of course die. But the mind, so the body can never realize immortality. But it is the mind that can realize immortality. The man of the world will raise a question, well, why bother about such airy-fairy transcendent stuff, which all moonshine surely, get along with everyday job in the world. Well, how have we got along with our everyday jobs in the world? What's the state of the world? Your state, my state, the world's state. And what has it been ever since man has been on the globe? But a tragic confusion, a mess, a sorrow, and a suffering, which tears the light of life and happiness out of our eyes. That is the state of the world. Why bother about this immortality, which I can't imagine? That is the mistake you make, dear friend, to try to imagine the unimaginable. The very process of imagining is one in which the I am I draws unto itself and therefore everlastingly encloses it in a prison house. So this whole thought process, as it is with us, in our ignorant, imperfect state, is a perpetuation of the condition of mortality. And why is mortality stressed by me so much at this moment? Because this kind of mortality is associated with ill, with the ill condition, with suffering, with evil. That is why. To use the theistic word, with sin. It is precisely this kind of mortality, this thinking process which we go through daily, which keeps us sundered from the unity of the universe. And that is the fundamental meaning of the word sin, the sundered unity. So then, words, thoughts, as you and I experience them, are perpetually this. And if words and thoughts are this, what are our actions? They are also necessarily, in some form or other, in some way or other, and at some time or other, they are destructive and they will inevitably lead to death which is the wages of sin. Not to death in its transcendent reality, which is the perfecter, the consummator, and life's immortal twin. That's what the right death is. You will ask me, how do I bring about right death? Don't word the question wrongly. How do I bring about right death? I can't do it. Let it happen. Then you will ask, well, how can it happen? How should it happen? Be completely attentive from split second to split second and not hold back any single shape of thought or feeling, of action, of experience, of pleasure, of pain, of joy, of sorrow, of exaltation, of depression. From moment to moment, let the becoming process pass through, but be totally attentive to it. If you can be totally attentive to it, then it will never bind you, it will never hold you. And you will be free. This is spiritual freedom in the profound sense. And in the letting it go, as it passes, without holding it, but being totally attentive to it, nothing held back for the self, there is no selfness bound up with the process, the becoming process, that is death, the perfecter, the culminator. Do you follow this? You will actually not be conscious of, because consciousness is almost always discriminative, but you will be wholly awake to. This transcendent awareness will function then. You will be wholly awake to the reality of immortality. How and why is it that we feel that, this experience, this delightful enjoyment we were having is now over, and you feel depressed? Because you want to hold back a particular shape. But supposing one is totally attentive to the experience as it is taking place and doesn't hold back for oneself any aspect of it, what happens then? That the shape of that experience changes into the next shape, and there is no loss or gain. In your state of complete awareness, you are immortally realizing what takes place in the day-to-day becoming process. This is the only immortality that has real meaning and which enables the phenomenon which has been put in religious terms as the peace of God which passes understanding, or the state of nirvana to be with you, the state of deathlessness. Now you see the meaning of deathlessness. You don't grasp at anything, you don't hold on to it, you let it go. But you let it go with complete attentiveness, so that there is no I am I center, which wants to grasp and keep the pleasant for yourself or reject what you find is unpleasant. In what state are you then when you are awake? Aren't you in the harmless state then? Aren't you in the selfless state then? The state that is free of thought, which is a confusion and a misery and an illusion. Then when you use your eyes, you will see the truth of that which is being seen. You will have no illusions. And as I said to you, you remember, those of you who were here, particularly last March, this was the first time I put this out very specifically and clearly. When you see something, transcendence itself is looking through your eyes. Think of your responsibility. The ultimate real, the totality, the transcendent, God, Brahman, use whichever word you like, sees itself and its beauty, its glory, its immortality, its wonder, its totality, through your eyes, hears the music of existence through your ears, and knows itself through your mind. Because the I am I no longer obtrudes itself upon the actuality of the transcendent reality. So you see, strive to win nirvana, or to climb the golden stairs to the kingdom of heaven, and precisely the reverse will take place. The more exalted your aspiration, the more terrible is the punishment. You see the meaning of Lucifer aspiring to equality with the Almighty, the bright morning star, being cast into hell. That is quite natural, isn't it? The aspiration, which is not pure aspiration, but is personal ambition, the higher it aims, the more terrible is the punishment for it. So, if our aspiration, and aspiration is essential, if our aspiration for fulfilling our destiny on this globe is to be pure, that aspiration must be allowed to work by itself without the interference of my preconception as to what that destiny ought to be. Who in the world is free of preconceptions? Who is free of assumptions? Who is free of beliefs and convictions and all the rest of it? I said earlier, we have to be like a vessel which has no substance, which means that there is nothing solid, nothing opaque to resist transcendence. you're totally open to reality. And in that, you transcend mortality. And this very becoming process, which otherwise is the process of suffering, ill, ignorance, misery, confusion, evil, and death, death the destroyer, this very becoming process is transformed into the eternal beauty of the divine. In your mind and consciousness, you will say, why do I say your mind and consciousness? Because the phenomenon of mind and consciousness is the outstanding characteristic of any human living organism. That is why. You are the purified nexus. You, the son of man, the daughter of man, have become the son or the daughter of God. And they are an identity. They are not different. Now, just briefly, we all know the state of the world. We all know our own state. Longings, desires, passions, the imposition of one's will, the fulfillment of one's ambitions and all the rest of it, and all the pain and misery and frustration associated with it. We all know how the world has rapidly lost its moral backbone. It definitely has lost it. It is there. The world cannot buy a new backbone. That rotten backbone, rotten as it is indestructible as long as the human race exists on the globe. It has to be healed. It has to be transformed. And where does that healing start? Not by the plans and the efforts of people who are ignorant, confused, self-centered, self-oriented. It hasn't got to. It will never succeed if the work starts outside oneself. Organizations, societies, international conferences, and all the rest of the humbug. This has gone on ever since man's been on the globe. The animals can have much better conferences than we can have. They are much more capable of coming to an agreement and understanding than we are. Because they are not cursed with this terrifically isolative I am I consciousness. Not that way. Each one of us is the microcosm in whom is symbolized and represented in actual fact the whole macrocosm, mankind itself. I can't make another person right. I may assist him, I may perhaps inspire him in some way or other, which may help him to become right. But I can't make him right. This is a living process, remember. And each organism can live only for itself, organically. Can I eat on your behalf and digest on your behalf? It's totally impossible. Can you breathe on my behalf? You see? It is the personal, individual responsibility. So, if we are wise, we allow the whole process to take place. This is very important. We are the sincere religious-minded people, the people with fine feelings and all the rest have gone wrong, is just here that they want to make the thing come about. You can't make it come about. It comes about on its own. It is life, it is transcendence, it is the totality which, because of which this exists at all. This can't exist on its own. If the environment disappeared, this disappears with it. By this I mean myself, the living person. Not for a moment could I subsist if air and light and heat and everything else disappeared. Not for a moment. Isn't that true? I can't make the thing happen. All I as an individual, you as an individual can do is to be attentive, and in that attentiveness, unhindered by our biases, our prejudices, our preconceptions and our assumptions, understand, learn the truth of life. And in that process, this totality works through you and brings about the fruition of itself through you, the living organism. Then all egoism is out. You become an egoless being. Then you are true being. But as long as we are cursed with this egoistic drawing unto ourselves and holding it, we are against the stream of life, the trend of life. There is no salvation that way. There is no humanity that way. There is no possibility of living as a social being, as a society that way. Recently I've been fulminating against the latest shibboleth, socialism. It's a word. But there is no such fact as socialism displayed, particularly by those who have based their totalitarian, compulsive, self-concerned orders on this word, socialism. They are the worst offenders against society. If I am the prisoner of my self-centered I am I consciousness, then I cannot be conscious in terms of us. That's what it means. I'm not conscious in terms of us, of we. And if I limit the us to my family, my nation, I am still, by self-identification, deluding myself that I have freed myself from this limited I am I consciousness. All I do is to expand my ego to include you and everybody else. See, one has to really to see that. And please don't take my words and try and hold them in your memory and say, this is what he said and I've got to be like that. That is precisely the way of failure. Just be quiet. Utterly quiet within yourself. Don't resist nor indulge. Let the thing happen with yourself in quietness. The quietness of the deep slumber state. And then you will find that the reality of all the great spiritual values, the transcendent reality which is not out there or some impossible height to scale, but which is the simple living fact of your own being, this transcendent reality of love, of truth, of wisdom, of goodness, of beauty, all of which are indefinable in terms of our thinking and speaking, all these will just naturally function. And you will never know that you are the happiest person in the world. But you will just be happy in yourself. And you will radiate that happiness everywhere without your knowing it. But other people will see the light. And they will, not knowing how, be inspired. And this is how you put the world to rights, if I may use that phrase. There is no other way. If you desire that, oh, these suffering people shall be freed of their boils or the pimples on their noses, oh, heavens alive, throw all that into the dustbin. Be utterly unconcerned with that. Be completely attentive. Just remain attentive. And the transcendent reality will do the rest. So now, there is no need to be bowled over by the state of the world, by one's own state. Be utterly attentive like this, and the power of compassion and wisdom will well out of your living being. And that is the best that any individual can do under the circumstances. Under whatever the circumstances may be. So now you see, nature has given us this blessing of deep slumber. Nature, Mother Nature, has done her task. And the husband of Mother Nature is Father God. And he says, come on, sonny. Come along. Get along in the right way. He won't help you. He won't. You have to stand on your own feet. If he keeps helping you with his transcendent omnipotence, good God, you will never get anywhere. You have to do it yourself. So, awake and keep going without flagging.